Welcome to the Chair Yoga Podcast with me, Maria Jones. Knowledge and inspiration for teaching and practicing chair-based yoga. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Chair Yoga Podcast. In today's podcast, we have Gillian, who is an anti-diet food and body freedom coach and body positive yoga teacher. She came to yoga as a way to cope and find peace and freedom with food and her body since 2017 and has been helping people get off the diet roller coaster and start feeling good in their bodies. Gillian describes her mission as helping women find lasting peace and freedom with food and their body through her group and private coaching sessions, as well as body positive yoga. Gillian aims to create spaces where all bodies are celebrated and respected, and to be particularly supportive for those who struggle with body confidence and self-acceptance. So welcome, Gillian. Thank you for agreeing to do this with me. How are you today? I know you told me you tested positive, but
I did. Thank you so much for having me, Maria. In general, feel good in life. Today, slightly less, as you say, I just tested positive for COVID, but I feel like it was going to come my way at some point. So here we are.
Yeah, exactly. Tell us a little bit about you. What brought you to yoga? I know I read your bio, but maybe you can share something I have not read.
Yeah, so you're right. My business has been around since 2017, but I have been practicing yoga way before that, probably the last 10 years or so. And I found yoga, I would love to say it was a kind of spiritual endeavor, but honestly, I just had a sore back. I would go to physio and I resented going to the physio appointments because I'd have to take time off work. And he said, if there's a yoga class nearby or at your gym, like these are basically just yoga stretches that I'm asking you to do. I very reluctantly, because I was very much in a mindset at that point of in time, of if I move my body, it's because I want to change my body. I want it to shrink. I want to tone up. I want it to be different than what it is. That involved like punishment and sweating and all those things. And I would walk past the yoga class in my gym and be like, what's the point in that? What happens? Like, I don't see any difference in people's bodies. But that's where I was in my life at that point in time, chronic dieter, really not accepting of my body at all.
Yeah. Were you attending Les Mills classes back to back?
Yes, 100%. You know, exactly 100%. That's what I was doing.
I know the type.
Yeah. I was hardcore. And I would line up for these classes and looking into the yoga studio, just rolling my eyes. So then eventually I had to drag myself there because I was like, if I want to improve my back, this is what I need to do. And I found it really hard to look at myself in the mirror doing yoga at first because of how I felt about my body. Thankfully, I just landed in a class that was really inclusive and really accessible. The teacher, although she was able-bodied, she was in a smaller body, she really had a lot of understanding and knowledge and experience and compassion for people in all sorts of bodies, all different ages. And I realize now that's fairly uncommon. Certainly in Edinburgh, in the city where I live in, there's very few accessible inclusive classes. And yeah, over the years, I slowly started to feel really much more comfortable in my body and started to understand that actually I could rebuild this relationship with myself with the support from my teacher. Yeah.
Now you're describing all this, and I had to become really unwell before I turned into yoga. I had a bout of flu. People already know that I have systemic lupus, so I've been immunosuppressed for a very long time. So in May 2010 or something like that, 2010, I got the flu for a very long time. And then when I tried to have a bath, as you do after being in bed for a very long time, instead of a shower, you fancy a bath and reach for the soap, my back went, and I was like, oh my God. And then going to the physio back and forth, and he basically said, you need to go to regular yoga.
Yeah, good prescription. I started
and it really helped. Just like you, I used to line up for my Les Mills classes, body pump, body combat, or any cardio back to back that I could attend. I had some body balance as well.
Yeah, I think I actually did body balance maybe before I started yoga, because I thought maybe I can still do a Les Mills class, but it'd be yoga-esque, but it didn't really have the effects that I needed.
I think it needs to be, without being judgmental, because I love body balance and I still love body balance myself, without being judgmental, I think it needs to be a lot slower.
Yeah, I think so too. Absolutely.
For it to have a better effect on the body in a way. With the slower movement, you get more awareness. But yeah, I had to be broken to appreciate the value of yoga, both inside the body and outside after having the flu. So as a coach and yoga teacher, what approaches in the practice of yoga have been most beneficial for your clients?
So through coaching, I work with people who have distressed eating patterns, who are chronic yo-yo dieters, who are very committed and invested in shrinking and changing their body, yet suffering a lot of symptoms like emotional eating and binge eating and food preoccupation and all of that. So very dysfunctional relationship with food. And ultimately, that stems from a real discomfort in being in their body, a real judgment around how their body looks, how their body moves. So what I've found personally and professionally is the practice of yoga, yes, the movement aspect, of course, the mindfulness aspect, the embodiment, the being in your body, trying to drop out of your head and into your body. But I think probably more than anything, what I find the best tool, I think, that it's helped me and my clients develop is this feeling of self-compassion. So meeting yourself on the mat exactly as you are every day, which is likely going to shift in some way or another, physically, emotionally, mentally, and really dropping into that feeling of acceptance that this is where I am today, and I'm going to work with that. And I'm going to see how I can move kindly and speak to myself kindly. And I think I say a lot of the time that that small square on the floor, that yoga mat, is truly where I first learned how to be kind to myself. And if you can develop that practice there, even just for that 1 hour a week, which is what it was for me in the beginning, I slowly then was able to take that further out into other places in my life. So I think that's been the biggest key element, I'd say.
Yeah. There's so many things that our bodies do for us that we do not appreciate. And I feel that sometimes moving my body into the awkward shapes that yoga suggests I do makes me appreciate the body, what the body can do. And the fact that you get the strength to lift a box, a heavy box around without your back seizing up, all those things can become very appreciative through movement as well as through the mindfulness and awareness part that yoga offers us, which is incredible, and I absolutely love it. So share some tips that yoga teachers in our audience can use in order to teach in a body positive manner, the kind of language or practices maybe, or maybe the attitude they should adopt in their classes.
Yeah, there's so many. I think what I've learned, as I identify as a plus size or a bigger bodied yoga teacher, which is quite rare, right? Most yoga teachers are smaller bodied. We learn from smaller bodied people. So we have this chain of like lack of understanding of what it feels like to be in a bigger body. Or you can also translate that into someone with certain health conditions or injuries or whatever is happening in their body that isn't mainstream, that isn't the norm. We don't see enough representation and diversity in yoga teachers. So I think the first thing is helpful for yoga teachers to understand is that if they are thin, white, able-bodied, that they hold a huge amount of privilege. And it would do us all, and I include myself in this, would help us all if we really could start to understand what other people's lived experience is. And why is it that we have this cycle of young, thin, able-bodied people coming to the mat? And it's probably because there's a culture being developed in mainstream yoga that isn't as inclusive as it could be. Yoga, at the end of the day, if we can breathe, we can do yoga of some description, but that's not what we see. You type yoga into Google and that is not what you don't see any diversity. So I think understanding other people's lived experience, unfortunately, you probably need to seek out additional training, right? In a standard 200-hour yoga teacher training, we really are taught just quote unquote normal bodies do and look like. And so the cycle is perpetuated. Obviously, I like to use props. I think every class should have props, walls, chairs, blocks, bricks, straps, all of it. And I think rather than, I remember one of my first classes out with my normal class. I went abroad and I went to a class, and the teacher said, there's props over in the corner if you need them. And I remember having this like walk of shame across the room, thinking, oh, I'm the only one appears to need these. What a failing. Whereas actually, if we can offer everybody props, you don't have to use them if you don't want to, but to have students understand how to use props if they become injured, or if they show up on the mat one day and their body just isn't moving the way that they're used to. How great if you have those skills and tools that you know how to use props, right? So reducing the shame in using these, I like to think of them as tools rather than crutches, right? They benefit all of us. And really, as a teacher, also trying to use language that is more accessible and inclusive, and trying to move away from, as I say, this feeling of shame, positioning a pose as there's one way of doing it and there's one way that it looks. And actually, much like developing this culture of body diversity, this diversity of poses can look different ways. There can be a million different variations, and it's still yoga and it's still the pose. So trying to find ways, and all this I'm preaching to the choir here, but finding ways of helping our students find the right variation of the pose for them, as opposed to trying to make them feel like their body has to fit into what we see in the textbooks as being the pose. So I'm going to stop there. I could go on forever, but I think those are the kind of headlines.
I really love, one of the things that I learned when I was learning how to teach yoga for dementia was layering. And that basically means that we cue the pose in its, shall we say, almost basic form, almost standardized, but simplified. And then you layer on cues for the breath. So layering on the breath, layer on challenges on the pose, etc. And in a way, people learn to self-regulate as you progress through the asana and breaking it up through the asana, shall we say, they learn to progress and self-regulate. So
I think offer that's choice, right? Like what I'm hearing you say is that there's all these different layers that are available to you if you wish. If that feels possible, you can explore. And I think it is about exploring and being curious and offering up those tools to our students so that they're the ones that make the decisions, right? This is really a process of empowerment rather than this dynamic that we have, not just in yoga, but in every position where there is a quote unquote expert or teacher, and the hierarchy, the dynamic is off. There's this person in a position of power. And that's why I would never call myself an instructor. I'm a teacher or a guide or maybe even a facilitator, because at the end of the day, I can show you what the options are and the tools are, your body better than anyone else, how it feels in your body. I don't know how it feels in your body. So it's this process of empowerment, really, is how I see it.
Yeah. And the process of holding a space for your students to explore the practice.
Yes.
It isn't about shapes and sizes. It's about exploration. Because if we do not move in different ways, we are not going to be able to discover the right way to move for our body in a sense of in a way that doesn't injure us during the day. Or if sitting down is a very good example, we're sitting down scrunched up all the time. Most people do. I don't know about your job. You might be more active than me, but even the correct posture. So when we are teaching people to explore that mountain pose, for example, we are giving them the tools to move in a different way. So I like that. Absolutely. Tell us, you spoke a lot about props and providing a space of exploration. How about the chair? What role does your chair play in your classes and in your teachings?
Yeah, so I teach exclusively online now. When I taught before in community settings, there was always chairs available. So unlike gyms, yoga studios, where I find it trickier for there to be chairs available, the spaces I've just always taught in seem to always have chairs, which is great. Everyone is offered a chair at the beginning. I set them out and people don't have to use them. But again, it's just like becoming familiar with it. And it might be that all it's used for is to help someone get up and down from the floor. That might be all it's used for. Or it might be if we're not close to a wall, we use the back of the chair to help balance. But the great thing about a chair is it offers different levels, right? I think the back of the chair is the highest level, the seat is the middle level. And then if you have props down from that, you've got these three levels that you can really start to work with. And there's certain poses that even in my body, I feel like reverse triangle pose is a great example, where I feel like the higher I can come up from the floor, so rather than my hand on the floor or on a block, if I take it onto the seat of a chair, I can find more rotation in my rib cage. So it's not, I always think, what's the point of the pose? And I think our egos, right, get us into this place of, but the aim is to get my hand to the floor. And it's not actually, if you step back and think, what's the point of this pose? Why am I exploring this pose? So in reverse triangle, if the goal that day or the aim that day is to explore the rotation of the ribcage and the opening of the chest, then maybe then bringing the hand onto the chair is actually going to make that pose feel more successful for that goal. Yeah, I love it. And there's a million other ways that I would use it as well, but that gives you a good idea.
A very good pose. I cannot do it without the chair. My hand is always on my knee if I do not have a chair. But yeah, talking about reverse triangle, one of the things we explored in the latest training I decided to start attending, another 300 hour, I don't know what I'm thinking. Anyway, what I was thinking when I joined in May, but what I'm trying to say is that we were exploring that reverse triangle pose, and Ganesh was saying, we're just introducing instability in your spine. You do not have to go all the way down. If you, like you said, you could be exploring it because you are exploring rotations of the spine. You could be exploring it because you are exploring a way to become unstable in the pose. You will become unstable in the pose before you hit the floor.
Yes.
And then if you do get to the floor, you may get to the floor in more ways than just your hand.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just, what is the point? Why are we practicing it? And then you definitely find space for a bigger block, which is really the chair.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I love finding different ways that it can be helpful. And often those ways are not things that we find in books or online. They're just through experimentation, really. And sometimes I learn the most A, from my students, or B, when my body feels different and I need to make some kind of variation myself and think, oh, that's a good idea. Add that to the toolkit.
Exactly. That's why the personal practice is so important, because we find different ways to explore the poses. Something I learned when I did my restorative yoga TT, because each setup in the restorative yoga feels different to every person, and you have hundreds of props you can adjust yourself with. I loved that. So where can our audience find you? Where can we find about body positive yoga? I might need to hire you and an anti-diet coach.
Yeah, you can find everything on my website, which is just my name, gillianmccollum.com. That's also my handle on Instagram, which tends to be pretty much the only social media that I use. I have a Facebook page, but I'm not very active there. But yeah, you can find everything there, classes, pre-recorded classes, and just learn a bit more about me and my coaching. Yeah.
Sounds really good. Before we finish this incredible discussion between us, because I felt really inspired and a little bit emotional, in the sense that our bodies move so differently depending on how our heart feels, as well as our body, as well as our mind. There's so much there. And when you started talking about acceptance, I started feeling a knot on my throat. So that's my takeaway. I need to work on my acceptance. But what is your takeaway from our discussion today?
My biggest takeaway is just, I'm super happy to speak to other people who are interested in accessible yoga. I think it's still very young in the yoga culture. I feel like to connect with other teachers who view it the same way, and we can have these discussions, and for the work that you're doing and taking it out to all these people is fantastic. So I feel, my takeaway is, I feel uplifted and positive, which I have to say I don't always feel about yoga culture, mainstream culture, but speaking to you today, I feel really positive and uplifted. So thanks for that.
Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you so much for being a wonderful guest.